Welcome to Envision This. Your hosts, Burrow and Mary Hall, connect you to visionaries of a more resilient, equitable, and earth-friendly future. Our guest, Micaiah Hart, envisions this. We need to make friends with our bodies because they are an infinite source of wisdom. Micaiah is an award-winning author and a spiritual mentor. Her principal tool is the shamanic journey, which enables us to get in touch with the 98% of reality, which is unseen and which contains vast potentials. Her intention is always to empower the individual, teaching people how to access their own personal inner wisdom and guidance. She helps people to free themselves from negative influences and learn how to operate from a place of trust instead of fear. Now, that's important in our culture. Her latest book, Life, Lies, and Sex, A User's Guide to Being in a Body, is an expose of the many lies that we've been told for centuries and an examination of the true nature of reality with some suggestions on how we humans might most easily fit in. So please help me to welcome Micaiah. You're welcome also to call in if you're listening live and join the conversation. The call-in number is 646-652-2235. Welcome, Micaiah.
Hi, Meredith. How kind of you to have me on the show. I really appreciate that.
We're looking forward to the interview.
Micaiah, what moved you to become an activist early in life?
You know, I have to say that really I was born with the desire to change the world. I mean, I was born I've always, from a very young age, had a very strong sense of justice and therefore injustice. And I perceived so much injustice around me. And so many of the people around me seemed to be stuck in negative patterns. It just seemed to me that the world needed to be changed for the better. And then, you know, when I was in my teens, I started hearing about things like apartheid in South Africa, which was, it was a very serious issue in the 70s. And feminism just, was like everything I'd ever thought. Other people were saying it. So I just, it all made complete sense to me. Just that, changing the world was obviously very important. It was what mattered.
What's moved you to switch from street tech activism to shamanism?
Well, that's a very good question. You know, I think the reason that I embraced radical politics so with all my heart and soul is because I was angry. You know, I was angry about the way I had been treated as a child, and I was angry about all the injustices in the world and the way I saw women being treated and poor people being treated and so on. And that anger stayed with me and motivated me for many years. And there came a point in my life in my 40s when I just was tired of being angry all the time. And I could see that, I was fighting for a better world. I wanted a more peaceful world where you can't fight for peace. It just doesn't work. That just doesn't make sense. So the more that I recognized that, the more I wanted to, I wanted to develop a much deeper understanding of the world and why it is the way it is and how we can change. And I wanted to live in a more peaceful way. And I studied with Angelise Arian, who is, she's dead now, but she was a wonderful teacher. She was one of the last spiritual leaders of the Basque people, who are the last of the indigenous groups of Europe. And what she was teaching was a form of shamanism. And it just made so much sense to me. And especially the connection with nature. You know, I've always felt so supported and loved by nature. And it just made enormous sense to me. I unfolded very naturally. And I felt, and I wanted to stop fighting. And that really meant to stop being a political activist, because political activism is about fighting.
In what ways is your shamanism a deeper form of activism?
Yeah. Well, that again is a very good question. It's funny. It's so much harder to talk about shamanism and spirituality than it is to talk about politics and activism, because we haven't talked about it in our culture ever. We've never talked about shamanism. We've never talked about those things. So we don't really have the right words to describe them. So I'm often finding when I talk about shamanism that it's, or spirituality, that I'm sort of lost for words. The words that I have available are not quite right. But, you know, you're absolutely right that my shamanism is, it's absolutely, I'm still about the world, about bringing more compassion and love to this planet. And I do it through shamanism. I do it through allowing myself to be a vehicle for, you could most simply perhaps call it a vehicle for love, but the kind of love that I'm talking about, it's love that exists beyond duality. So the words compassion and beauty and peace, love, they all, and joy, they really all mean the same thing to me. And in the end, how I might say it is that what I'm doing now is I'm an avenue through which more light can come to this planet. And, you know, if you look at the history of this planet, it is true that we've had a pretty dark kind of history on this planet. So I think more light is very relevant. Sense?
Yes, it does.
For sure. What kinds of shamanic ceremonies do you lead?
Well, I lead all kinds of ceremonies, and they're all what I would call shamanic, because they're all about really relating to the natural cycles around us. And I'm always, whenever I lead a ceremony, whether it's a shamanic journey or a wedding or a funeral or just a ceremony, perhaps to celebrate someone's, to celebrate a birthday, to celebrate someone moving into a new phase in their life. Whenever I do that, I start by calling in the directions. Now, that actually is something I learned from Wiccan ceremonies when I was doing Wiccan ceremonies and was actively studying what is called witchcraft. It was very normal in those kinds of circles to create a sacred circle by calling in the directions. And that is very much about establishing where we are. Now, I have for many years now, I've been studying with a group of beings called Amag, who speak through a woman called Diana John, and they've been incredibly supportive and helpful to me. And as an aside, I should say here that I, on the whole, I'm a little leery of channeling, but Diana and Amag are really awesome. And when they come into, when she goes into trance and they come present in the room, it's like a physical sensation of wisdom and love. It feels to me like the room fills up with wisdom and love. And so when you have that kind of physical sensation, then you don't have any doubt, you know. It feels like wisdom and love. And you can't doubt it. So they've really helped me to develop my own personal practice. And I've talked to them about calling in the directions. And what they've said is that part of what it is about is establishing where we are on this planet now, like the coordinates of Micaiah. Where is Micaiah standing at this moment in time? And it's very useful to do that, partly because, even though, you know, being human is so paradoxical. So even though very often when you're thinking about making changes of moving on in your life, for instance, even though you might not think that your body is part of that movement, we are, you know, the body, the personality, it is who we are being at this moment in time. And we are physical, and we are in a physical place on this planet. And the awareness that we are is very important, because if we're not aware of where we are, it's going to be very difficult to go somewhere else. And that applies on a physical level and an emotional and mental level. You know, if you're in denial about things that are going on in your life, then you're not being truthful about where you stand. Perhaps you're not expressing your opinion clearly or something like that. But anyway, it's important to know where you stand if you want to move on. And moving and changing is part, a huge part of being human. So I think I've got a little off the subject here, actually. Have I answered your question at all?
Not really. Yes, you have. Am I hearing you correctly that you feel that we need to be present in the here, in nature, in our bodies, in our emotions, and that only as we are totally present are we real and able to be effective?
I would absolutely say yes. Yes, I would absolutely say that's a very good summing up of what I'm saying. And so being here now, I mean, you know, there's lots of talk about how you need to be in the now. And just to be in the now is a little difficult, because now is already past. There's a sense in which we are actually always a little in the future, because the now is already past.
But except that it's all always.
Yes. To be in the here and now, yes. Mm-hmm. This place here that is here now, that is what it is now, yes. That kind of presence is a place of power. It's a real place of personal power. And it carries with it all the responsibility of being in your personal power. You have to take responsibility for being here now, for what is occurring within your presence, for, you know, for your reaction to that, to what is occurring around you, for your part in it. And it's certainly true, sadly, that in this world of humans, we do tend to avoid our really fully taking responsibility for here now and what is going on here now. And, I think it's extremely important that people start taking responsibility. And you also mentioned nature. Yes, I mean, nature is an incredible teacher. And one of the things I do in my work is I help people to get in touch with a sense of support, guidance, in some of my shamanic work. They call their guides power animals or allies. Mm-hmm. You know, whatever form we see them and whatever terms we use to call them, it is certainly true, something that I have absolutely no doubt about, that each of us is guided. We have guidance available to us in many different forms. And we can access that whenever we choose. It we remember that it's always there, and it's very easy when you get in a panic about something to completely forget that you can actually ask for help from those unseen realms, and help is always provided. It's a very amazing thing. It is always provided. You have to be willing to ask. You have to be, there's a certain humility, I guess, required in asking for help. But it's very necessary. I feel very important that people learn to do that. Does that make sense to you in your own lives? Do you relate to the sense of feeling guided?
Absolutely. And, who I speak to as a guide, you know, may change. Like recently for me, it's been at first I thought I missed the hitchhiker, but it's my animus, the male aspects of myself. But I see him as a hitchhiker, and I can quite often turn to him and, and get some wisdom there, because it's a part of myself that, to some extent, I'm cut off from.
Yes. Yes, it's important for us, actually, especially in the evolution of the planet right now, to be willing to balance the masculine and the feminine within. And again, those words don't quite describe, they don't, you know, because we have such immediate models of what is masculine, what is feminine, the words tend to be a little too limited. In fact, those are very important aspects of our duality as humans. And we can incorporate both those aspects so that they become one, in a sense, and yet it's also useful to see them as separate. I mean, it's so difficult to talk about sometimes because these are concepts that, that we don't normally talk about in this world.
But, yeah, and it's a huge, huge issue that could take us into a 3-hour show here. But how does the shamanic journey you lead people on enable us to get in touch with that 98% of reality that's unseen and contains past potential?
Right. Well, one of the things I absolutely love about the shamanic journey is that over the years I've been leading them, and I have been leading them a long time now, I've learned that when someone commits to being present for a shamanic journey, what they're actually committing to is to being open to, you might say, to conversations with, although of course sometimes there'll be wordless conversations, but open to communication with what you might call our allies or our guides. But you might also call it all that is, the creator, the creatrix itself. You might also call it a soul, your own soul, who decided to manifest this body in this lifetime right now. You know, there are many ways to refer to it, but we are committing to an exchange of communication with that essence. And that actually is, that's such an incredible thing, because those, you know, the soul that we truly are, whatever you want to call it, it knows exactly what passed most. Get back to the path that we chose for ourselves in this lifetime, to walk that path in truth and in integrity. You know, I can lead people on guided visualizations, and that's great, but I'm guiding it. It's a completely different thing, because I don't know what my clients need. You know, how can I know what my clients need? It's like, yeah, sure, if they talk to me for an hour, maybe just a few minutes beforehand, I'll get some idea. But only some idea. Whereas, you know, the soul that you are, it knows. And when you're open to that and you come to a shamanic journey, then you really are going to be able to receive, to receive from the soul that you are, to receive communication and advice and help and support. Sometimes people on these journeys, I mean, the journeys can be very, very different. Sometimes people they don't have words to what's happened. So they don't come back with a story. They come back with a feeling of peace or a feeling that something has shifted and changed. And I do think that because, when I lead a shamanic journey, I sound the drum, a very fast beat, which, of course, creates a pretty intense vibration. And that vibration can help the electromagnetic grid of the body to shift in very beneficial ways. I mean, I'm sure that you, like most of us, have noticed that the planet around us is changing. And part of what's happening is actually that the electromagnetic grid of the planet is shifting and changing. And our bodies, the electromagnetic grid of our bodies, need to shift and change in order to remain in alignment with the planet. And the shamanic journeys can facilitate that. And sometimes person will come back and they won't even remember anything about the journey. In fact, sometimes people sleep all the way through it. And I used to think that was, something was wrong if people slept through my shamanic journeys. And then one day, there was a journeyer there who, I mean, he slept from the moment I opened my mouth until the moment I opened my mouth for the invocation, he fell asleep and he slept until I stopped drumming. And when he woke up, he looked different in some way. He looked more relaxed, more like he was at ease. And I spoke to him later, and he said to me, "I just really want to thank you, because that was the deepest and the most refreshing sleep that I've ever had in my life." And I realized that, you know, we don't have any words for what happens, and how would we know how to describe what happened for him? But something really big had shifted. And I think that very often when we make really big shifts like that, we actually, it's better if we're asleep, because otherwise the rational brain gets in the way. And, you know, the rational brain really likes to be in control, and actually it's not fit to be in control. I mean, it's a very, very useful tool, but what needs to be in control is that, you know, our hearts or our inner sense of knowing. And when the rational brain gets nervous because, you know, maybe we're not paying attention to the physical reality of the moment or whatever, then the rational brain can really get in the way and make things very uncomfortable for us. And I'm sure you've both experienced that.
Certainly. I'm such a wordsmith and so intellectually oriented that I'm so grateful that at one point about 10 years ago, I was offered the gift of spirit singing, of just beginning to sing but without words, and not just singing what, you know, some melody or something, but singing whatever sounds came out of me. Wherever the spirit led me. And it is peace giving, it is help giving, it is joy giving, because it does get me out of trying to explain things, gets me out of all the words tie me up in.
Yes, words can really tie us up and limit us, because words are limited, because they're about, we can only describe what we have words for, and there's so much more to reality. I mean, the vastness of being, you know, it's beyond our ability to imagine. There's infinite potential. And we can only access, in these physical lives, we can only access a small portion of that. And, you know, that's fine. We're only meant to access a small portion of that. If we could, if we were suddenly presented with the truth of all that is, I think our bodies would probably just explode because they wouldn't be able to contain it. But, I mean, I do think that a great deal of our purpose in choosing to be born into these bodies is to experience love and joy in as much depth and breadth as we can, without destroying our bodies. And, you know, I tell people, you know, not a lot of good being human, looking to other people to tell you how to do it, because really there aren't very many human beings who have been on this planet who've done it very well, at least not as far as I can tell from the history of the planet. You know, we certainly have a few leaders like Buddha and Jesus and Muhammad, but the problem with the religions that have arisen from those in the present, those incredible beings, is that the religions have been perverted by people who want to, who have used them to establish power over others. And wherever there is a power struggle of that kind, there's going to be lies and distortion and confusion. The truth can only be found really within ourselves.
Beautifully stated. How do you help folks gain clarity about the intentions they had when they were born into this body?
You know, I feel like the most I can really do is offer them channels of communication with the soul that they are. And sometimes... well, for instance, I led a shamanic journey yesterday, actually. And usually when I lead shamanic journeys, I prefer a fairly small group, like between 8 and 12 is fine by me. And in this group, there were a couple of dozen people. And I could tell as soon as I went into the room that some of these people were not... How to put this? Because I don't mean to put anyone down. You know, we're all at different places in our lives, in our personal evolution and so on. But I knew that there were some people there who were not going to be able to handle, let's say, the intensity of the energy that usually in when I got the invocation. And what was particularly interesting about this journey actually is that the energy that came in was very powerful and intense. And I was surprised by that because I was thinking that because there were people who I knew would have difficulty with it, that the energy would be less. But I think there were some people there who were absolutely willing to be completely present with the full intensity of it. So anyway, several people, I think four people left during the journey, which was appropriate. I mean, if you should leave if you're not, if it's difficult for you, if it's too uncomfortable for you. So I would say that those people were, I'm guessing now, but I would say that probably they were not ready to really listen to what souls that they are actually had to tell them. It would have meant too many changes in their lives, and they simply weren't ready for it.
Mm.
And now, the people who remained, they had a variety of different journeys, and There was one woman, for instance, who just really had a very fun journey. She had a real fun time. She really enjoyed herself.
Delightful.
But there was somebody else there who had a very painful journey. He visited a number of past lives, other lives that were very difficult, and he needed really to learn to forgive himself for things he had done in the other lives. And that's very common. We really do need to learn to forgive ourselves, because all of us have led. I mean, you know, I can assure you that pretty much anybody who's listening to the show has led lots and lots of other lives. And some of those lives probably weren't very pretty. And, you know, if in this lifetime you have a very strong commitment to love and compassion, then it's highly probable that you led some other lives in the past where you didn't have that. Because it's only by, you know, we live within duality. Therefore, it is only by having the experience of lack of love and compassion that you can get to a place in your life where you are absolutely committed to that. So anyway, you know, I feel like I create a space within which people can receive gifts from all that they are. And sometimes it really works for people, and sometimes people are not ready for it. And I don't feel like it's really up to me, because I can't, well, I will say, it is sometimes when I perceive that somebody is having a hard time with what I'm saying, it is tempting for me to censor what I'm saying. And, you know, it's not really just what I'm saying, it's deeper than the words. And I know, because I've been doing this for a lot of years, that it is never okay for me to censor what I'm saying. I can say it in different ways that make it easier for people, but to try and censor it.
That the people that aren't ready to hear or need not to hear have their own ways of censoring, of tuning out, that you don't have to do it for them, because their own being knows what they're not ready to deal with and has a way to tune it out.
Yes, and that's an important safety mechanism. I mean, people need that. And, you know, you can't impose this kind of stuff on people. It doesn't work.
Right. You can't, and, you know, I'm going to play the devil's advocate a little bit. And, you know, at the same time, we're in a very dangerous position in terms of, you know, people feeling alienated and, you know, destroying the planet and so on and so forth. How would you respond to, you know, trying to get people to wake up? Yeah, thank you.
Wake up, yeah. Well, I actually believe that if people don't want to wake up, it's better to let them sleep. And that is a really hard one for me, because I want people to wake up. You know, I want this to be a planet where people are willing to embrace the fullness of awareness that is available to them. I want this to be a planet where people are willing to go really deep and be absolutely truthful and honest and real as much as they can be. And I need to accept that not everybody wants that, and not everybody can be like that, and that is the way it is.
Yeah.
So I
was just going to say that, and also, you know, as you were talking about that, you know, I thought of the parable of the Johnny Appleseed, who, you know, you plant seeds, and, you know, when people are ready to wake up, then they're going to wake up. But, you know, it's like a fetus that develops. It has to be ready to born before it actually emerges.
Yes.
But as
yes,
you
I would absolutely.
Create, There are things that I heard or that people said to me at various stages of my life that I said, you know, oh, that's wise or whatever, but I just kind of passed over that later mm-hmm. come back to hit me full force and
right.
and move me to change.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, I mean, it takes a lot of courage to wake up and to be absolutely open and truthful. And, you know, just being willing to take responsibility for yourself. I mean, you can't, once you're really awake, you can't blame anybody else for what's going on. You have to, you know, you have to acknowledge that you are a powerful creator, and you're playing your part here in this planet, and blaming other people doesn't get anybody anywhere. So
Could you tell us about learning to operate from a place of trust instead of fear?
Well, I do think that is probably the most, well, that sums up what I would like to be teaching people. You know, we are certainly taught in this culture, I was certainly taught when I was growing up, that the world is a dangerous place and you have to fight for your place in it. You have to fight for your rights. You have to fight.
Mm-hmm.
And made sense to me then. I was never quite sure it was true. And the older I get, the more I perceive that that way of being in the world simply does not make sense to me. It does not make sense to me at all. I feel that that's a fearful way of being in the world, and I'm not willing to be constantly motivated by fear. And, you know, there are times in my life in all our lives, when fear can be kind of useful, like, you know, if you're crossing the road and if that hits you, you can fear makes you jump out of the way. And you know, the body is finite and it can experience fear. And that's, you know, that's to be paid attention to. But all that we are, the truth of that which we really are, is infinite. It's,
mm-hmm.
all, it's eternal. And so it cannot be destroyed. It can't actually even be harmed, although we in these bodies can certainly experience, you know, emotional and mental and psychic damage. I'm not arguing about that. We certainly can do that. Still, there is, in the end, when one is truly in touch with, and this is where words really fail us, so I can say in touch with, in contact with, in alignment with all that we are, you become aware that this human reality is it's an illusion. It's a wonderful, glorious illusion, don't get me wrong, and we're meant to be fully in it. So I'm not suggesting that we try to remove ourselves from the illusion. But it is an illusion, and we can choose how to be affected by it and choose our perspective, what perspective to take at any given moment. So when you really begin to realize that, and it takes a lot of practice to learn how to work with one's choices on that kind of level. And, you know, we come back to the question of who is doing the choosing and so on. But there comes a point where you realize that something much, much greater than these small cells is in charge. And that which is in charge is, it's the word trust doesn't even quite apply because it's such magnificent brilliance that you can't, there's no point in being afraid of it. I mean, the ego is afraid of it. The ego will run And you see this quite often with people, that their egos run away screaming when they get in touch with it. So the ego has to drop away, and then there's just that place of trust, and you learn how to fall back into the loving arms that are always there to hold you. And you learn to get a much, much greater perspective on existence and on our lives here as humans. You can still play the game, but you know more that it's a game.
So it's a place where you know that you are beloved, and you know that you are abundantly supported in all that you really need.
Very well put.
Thank you. What is your work as an ordained minister of holistic healing?
I became ordained partly because I had been living quite a hermit for quite a long time. I have a real tendency to want to withdraw from the world, because I would say my greatest challenge on this planet is relating to other humans. So it's often easier to not live in close proximity to them. But there came a point where I just felt very seriously called to be more out in the world, and to be a teacher and a model, if you like. And I decided that, this was about 10 years ago, and things have shifted a lot in 10 years, and people are much more open to the kind of stuff I'm talking about now than they were 10 years ago. And what I was looking for 10 years ago was something that would give me a little more credibility in the world, if you like. And so I met some people who were really great to work with, and I became ordained through them. But it is really just a label. Well, just a label. It's a very useful label, and does mean that I can do weddings. I can officiate at weddings and so on. So it was certainly well worth it. But it doesn't feel as important now as it did then. I think back 10 years ago, it did give me some credibility, because a lot of people think that what I'm talking about, you know, what we're talking about is complete rubbish. I mean, a lot of people still think that. They dismiss it completely. So, yeah, that's reality on this planet.
This next question, I could get into a discussion on it for an hour, but what do you mean when you advise we need to make friends with our bodies because they're an infinite source of wisdom?
Well, I personally, I've always been a very practical person. I've always been very much in my body, and I enjoy my body. So I've never been one who would embrace, like, some of the Buddhist teachings, for instance, where a lot of religious teachings teach us that the body is base, and, we need to rise above it. And I absolutely disagree with that. I think we are spiritual beings who have chosen to be here on this planet in these bodies, and if we're going to live out our purpose, we need to be here in these bodies. And what I've been told by my teachers is that what we have chosen to do when we chose these bodies is we have chosen to embody, or you might say incorporate, all the wisdom, or you might call it information, that we want in this lifetime. And the body, that wisdom is incorporated in the cells of our body. And it's always there and available to us. It's a matter of learning how to be open to it and how to access it. And in order to do that, we need to really be, and once again, we're not these terms like be in alignment with our bodies. Really, it's about being good friends with our bodies. And there's an awful lot of people on this planet who don't particularly like their bodies. and don't certainly aren't very respectful to them. And I believe it's really important to respect our bodies. You know, if our bodies want to exercise, then we need to learn to exercise the amount that our body wants and not to push it too hard. Mm-hmm. If our bodies are tired and want to sleep, we need to learn to lie down and sleep no matter what time of day it is. And, you know, I don't know if it would be true to say that all pains and illnesses are our body trying to speak to us. That might not be completely true. I think it is true a great deal of the time, but I also think that sometimes all that we are, chooses an illness in order to, sometimes we choose to be, you know, if we're at a job that we really hate, we might choose to get sick so that we don't have to go to the job. I mean, you know, there's many, many different things going on. But the example I just mentioned, so at this point in time, most of the people in the world do have to wait until the body is sick in order to learn to listen to the body. And lots of people don't, even when they're sick, they'll go straight to Western medicine and take something that'll mask the symptoms. But if we were really in tune with our body, the body would tell us before it got sick that it was reluctant to consider, continue to live in this kind of way, going to this kind of job every day.
Mm-hmm.
And we wouldn't become aware of that without having to get sick. So, you know, it happens on many levels. And people, you know, we all have tremendous, unlimited inner wisdom available to us, which might be, you know, the wisdom I'm talking about that is that we're embodying. The art is in learning how to access that wisdom, how to feel it, how to be consistently aware of it every moment of the day. And then we don't have to get sick in order to have our inner wisdom imposed on us, you might say.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, I just believe that being fully in touch with the body is an incredible. It makes being human a great deal easier. It makes the process of life unfold with more ease.
We're talking today with Micaiah Hart. She's a spiritual mentor and award-winning author. Her website is www.micaiahhart.org. Please join our conversation with Micaiah by dialing our Envision This studio at 646-652-2235 anytime during the live broadcast. Micaiah, what would you like to share with our listeners about your latest book, Life, Lies, and Sex, A User's Guide to Being in a Body?
That book, that's my most recent book. I also think it's probably the most important book I've written, but of course by that I mean that I think it contains a lot of very useful information. And, you know, realistically, other people may read it and not be able to digest the information that's there. And certainly the feedback that I've got, I mean, people really like it, but they also say that it's an awful lot of information to digest. And so I do tell people at the beginning of the book, in my introduction, I say, you know, don't feel that you have to read this book from beginning to end. Just flip it open at whatever page it flips open at, and there will be whatever it is you need to hear that day. It really is an examination of the nature of reality on this planet and how we as human beings can most easily fit into that reality, this reality, how to be happily human, if you like.
I'm sorry, I thought you were buoyant. You say it's about climbing out of the box that most of us were put in when we were still very young. Could you expand on that?
Well, the older I get, the more I realize that cultural and familial influences can be really, well, they almost always are very, very limiting. And at the same time, it often takes a lot of courage to make up your own mind, to decide for yourself what is right or wrong, to decide for yourself what path you want to follow, what you want to do with your life, where you want to be, and so on. And my real hope with that book is that it will help people to realize how important it is that we follow our heart's desire, no matter who tries to tell us otherwise, no matter what the influences are that inform us otherwise. We need to follow our own hearts. We really need to listen to and follow our own hearts and respect what is right for us. So that's certainly my intention with that book.
How does it help you divorce yourself from society's negative influence?
Well, in the end, that's a choice that you make or not. And it, as I said, it takes a lot of courage. But, you know, you only have to, I mean, you know, we talk about the news is on at 6 o'clock or whatever. We don't mean the news, we mean the bad news, because the good news doesn't usually make it. And I personally don't find it useful to watch that kind of stuff on TV or to listen to it on the radio or to read it. In fact, I don't read books very much, because so many books are about people having unpleasant experiences, you know. And it's supposed to be, you know, they're called thrillers, and it's supposed to be thrilling, but it doesn't thrill me to read about somebody being hunted and murdered and people being murdered and so on. So, you know, it's really, in the end, it's a choice that you can carry on doing what most people else around you are doing, or you can choose to spend your time walking in nature or writing your own books or listening to music that brings you to joy, or chatting with friends, or just spend time with yourself and with the truth of that which you really are. And that is always going to be a positive influence. And the negative influences around us, we don't have to get caught up in them, but it is very, very common for people to get caught up in them. And in the end, you just have to realize, I don't want this anymore.
Do you think more people are realizing that?
Yes, I do think more people are realizing it. I think things are changing very fast on this planet. I think more and more people are realizing that they can take charge of their own lives and listen to their own hearts and follow their own paths, and you know, which might be what waking up is. And these terms we use, like enlightenment and or awakening and so on, they're difficult to define. And it isn't up to me to judge what somebody else ought to do with their lives, and I generally really try to avoid that. But I do think that I find it really delightful that more and more people are aware of they're stepping into their own personal power and taking charge of their own lives.
Yeah, and I see it as kind of a holographic tidal wave that's kind of mounting. And I mean that in a very positive way. You know, more and more people are starting to wake up and really, challenging, you know, the stuff that we've ingrained into ourselves, while also fostering a new way.
Yes, it's absolutely new waves arising by the moment on this planet. It's very delightful, actually.
Yes, we're very blessed to have chosen to be here right now, right here. You indicate in the book that for you and for many people, sexuality helps you to allow universal energy to move through you freely and connect you with your soul. Can you talk a little about that?
Yes, I believe that the experience of orgasm and sexual desire, you know, once again, we come back to the fact that words are limiting, and the word orgasm has, you know, it has some, for some people, they have very limited ideas of what's meant by that. So I'm speaking now in the very broad definition of the word orgasm. But basically, sex is experience that starts with the body and takes us far beyond the body when we allow it. And that's, I mean, what else in life can do that for us? I mean, creativity can certainly be like that. You know, when I'm writing a book and I allow it to flow through me and I read what I've read afterwards and I'm absolutely delighted. The experience of orgasm is just, it's an incredible gift and an opportunity. And, I should say at this point that I'm really, you know, we live in duality, and therefore, you know, sex can be an incredible opportunity for opening in a way that almost nothing else in human life can offer us. And at the same time, sex also, because we live within duality, it can be used to destroy and belittle us. So I'm completely aware of the fact that sex doesn't have to be a positive influence, but it can be a tremendously positive influence, tremendous opening, tremendously positive opening to love, to a depth of love, to depths of love that we may not experience any other way. Now, talk a little bit about the use of the word love there, because we do in this culture have some very limited ideas of what love is. And once again, I'm talking about it in the broadest sense. I mean, it is possible, in my personal experience, it is possible to love the checker at the grocery store. You know, when you're in a place of absolute openness, you look into somebody's eyes, yes, it could be somebody you're in bed with, but it could be the checker at the grocery store. You fall into their eyes, and in that moment, you are one with each other. And it might only last for a second or two. But it's not to be dismissed. There is that possibility of absolute love. I mean, we don't have, you know, there should be hundreds of words for love, different kinds of love. And, you know, there really are only a couple, love and compassion and desire. And they're often all three of them all mixed up, and they're all three actually, well, love is sort of an overall, but certainly compassion is that's a huge thing all on its own. And desire, I mean, desire is about creative flow moving through us, and it can manifest in many different ways. Very often people, when they feel that need for that energy flow arising within them, they turn to sex as a way of releasing it because they don't know what else to do. And that's fine. I'm not saying that's a bad thing, although sometimes it can be, sometimes it's not the right place to go. We're not taught other places to go to allow that flow to occur, you know, to gather and rise and then be released. And yet there are many ways that we can do that through different kinds of creativity. through play, through sports, through our families, being with, you know, being with children. Children know how to do it. So, you know, there's many ways that it can happen, there's many ways.
Why do you think that those of us indoctrinated by patriarchal and consumer culture need to be taught to appreciate and delight in the experience of the physical world?
Well, I do think that there's been an incredible alarming stress in this, well, in all over the world, not just in Western culture, but an enormous stress on the importance of being, the importance of the rational brain, actually. And as I said earlier, the rational brain, the mental processes and so on, they're very useful tools, but they're not meant to be in charge.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's a little bit of a tricky question, that, because it does very, very much vary with different cultures and people's upbringings. Like, you know, some people have been brought up in, well, they may not even have acknowledged it, but they've been brought up in a very fearful environment.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been taught that being in control and having the rational brain in control all the time is what is the way to make the dangerous world safer. And so they're going to toe the line of whatever culture they're brought up in. They're not going to rock the boat because they've been brought up to believe that the world is really dangerous. And that's, you know, in the end, so much of it comes down to a personal choice. Like, are you willing to change your life? Are you willing to embrace new possibilities? Do you have the courage? And are you ready to embrace these new possibilities and be in the world in a completely different way? And some people are and some people aren't.
What would you personally like to see us manifest collectively as a culture and as a species?
Oh, that's a pretty broad question. But, I mean, I want to live on a planet where peace is something much greater than simply the absence of war.
Mm-hmm.
I want to live on a planet where people cooperate instead of competing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I fully acknowledge that competitions can be fun, but it can also really be fun to cooperate with people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can, you know, when you're dancing, you can dance in groups in the most beautiful ways. And it's an incredible experience to do that kind of thing with a group of people. And, you know, you work as a team together and, yeah, in all kinds of ways we can do that. So I would say that's perhaps one of the key things I want to see is a lot more cooperation and a lot less competition. And I want people to feel safe, to operate from a place of trust instead of fear in their daily lives.
Mm.
You know? And so, you know, when you're a lot of traffic on the road, you're getting bad-tempered, maybe you could fall back into the arms of love and allow the person who needs to change lanes to go in front of you instead of being determined to cut them off. And that's often what it comes down to, is things like that. And are we willing to help each other,
mm-hmm.
support each other, you know, acknowledging that this is one world and we are one people on this planet. So I really want more love in my life on a daily basis.
Yeah, and I think, you know, as you're talking about that, one of my sayings is that we need to move beyond our ethos of divide and conquer and instead foster, unite, and prosper. And I hear that exactly is what you're saying on a deeper level.
Yes. And you know, one of the things that I have noticed and noticed over and over in my life is that so many people have buried emotions from the past that they've been sitting on all their lives, probably. And those emotions very often prevent them from being present in the here and now, from being able to fully enjoy life, because they're busy sitting on those emotions of anger and fear, or whatever, you know, and the way, all the different ways that they can manifest, like annoyance, irritation, anxiety, so on. And it is, I would say, that perhaps the most basic work that most people need to do is about letting go of those old emotions. And when they do let go of those old emotions, their lives can really change, because they can be in the present, here and now. And here and now, most of the time, they're not going to find anything to worry about. And they're going to find a great deal of joy. And once again, we come back to the courage thing, that it takes courage to allow old emotions to move through us and move on. And sometimes we need help with that, and there are plenty of people who can help us with that. I mean, nowadays there are all kinds of techniques, like the emotional freedom technique, and many others, many I'm sure that I don't even know of. But in the end, what's required is to have the courage to commit to allowing those old emotions to move on, to freeing yourself from the weight of those old stuck emotions. And that is an incredibly valuable thing to do. So I would encourage everyone to do that. I certainly want to live in a world where people are taught and helped in letting go of old stuck emotions.
Speaking personally, I know, wow, that's a really tough job.
Well, you're ending on a note that I think is wonderful and piece of advice. And we've enjoyed sharing this time with you very much. Thank you, Micaiah.
Well, thank you both for having me on the show. Yeah, I mean, I've really enjoyed the show. Thank you.
Yeah, so have we.
Oh, we earlier today listened to a video of community that came together. I think they were in Spain and were singing the Ode to Joy. Mm-hmm. But they were just, you know, everybody was giving their whole body and their whole voice and their whole, you know, to it, and it was delightful. And I think that's the kind of community you're talking about. It's the kind of community we're trying to create. Mm-hmm. And I think our listeners too.
Well, and like the video goes, it's a on the spot occurrence. I mean, yeah, it's a symphony. But the whole thing starts off with this guy going in, and then this guy comes in with violins, and you know, so, and the orchestra builds on its own. Mm-hmm. And then it takes off and does the song, and then the people in the audience were also singing, and it was great.
Talk about the broader definition of orgasm.
Well, orgasm,
that's
but
what
also,
community should be.
But yeah, it's a community of interacting cells, and that's exactly how a fetus develops, how the earth develops, and so on. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know,
that's. we do need to end, but we're very, very grateful to you, Micaiah.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, you're doing great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. Thank you so much for having me on the show and all the good things you said. Yes. Thank you.
Great.